It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 56 degrees. We're looking for rain for the rest of the day. We blasted right through the predicted high of 55. Southeast wind to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, look for more rain, low of about 47 overnight. Southeast wind gusting to 25 miles per hour tonight. And for tomorrow, rain is likely with cloudy skies and a high near 51. Northeast wind gusting as high as 25 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, dragged out to sea by a giant flamingo, the Coast Guard comes to the rescue. We have a wildfire burning here in Kodiak. Senator Murkowski visited Dillingham. And President Trump blames Senator Murkowski for the Biden administration's decision to suspend drilling leases in Anwer. All that after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Nora Rahm. The Senate released a bipartisan report today on the January 6th attack at the U.S. Capitol that left five people dead. It concluded that Capitol Hill police officers were overwhelmed because of a lack of training and preparation. The report also found that some of the intelligence gathered in the weeks before the attack never made it up the chain of command. NPR's Claudia Grisales has more.
There were details about using the Capitol's tunnel system, a map of the Capitol complex, comments about blocking off entrances and exits, and encouraging rioters to confront members with weapons, be prepared to drag down police, and bring guns. It's now or never. It's these kind of comments that were not shared widely, and they believe this is part of this leadership failure.
NPR's Claudia Grisales. The head of Colonial Pipeline says the company called the FBI shortly after being hit with a ransomware attack that shut down gasoline supplies to the eastern U.S. last month. As NPR's Greg Myrie reports, the chief executive believes this helped the Bureau track and recover most of the ransom money.
The CEO of Colonial, Joe Blount, told the Senate committee the pipeline company turned to the FBI when it learned of the hack on May 7th.
We contacted the FBI almost immediately that morning once we determined that we were under attack.
The FBI traced the subsequent payment and recovered more than half of the $4.4 million Colonial paid to hackers believed to be in Russia. Blount said after the payment was made, the hackers provided a decryption key that's helped restore computer systems locked up by the criminals. But he said the key was not ideal and expects it will take months to fully repair the computer network. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is trying to reassure skeptical lawmakers that the U.S. will keep up the pressure on Iran, even if the U.S. gets back into the nuclear deal that the Trump administration had left. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
The Biden administration has been involved in indirect talks with Iran on reviving the 2015 nuclear deal. Secretary Blinken says it's not clear yet that Iran will do what it takes to get back into compliance. For its part, the U.S. would have to lift sanctions that were part of the deal known as the JCPOA.
And I would anticipate that even in the event of a return to compliance with the JCPOA, hundreds of sanctions will remain in place, including sanctions imposed by the Trump administration.
Some U.S. sanctions are meant to pressure Iran to stop supporting U.S.-designated terrorist groups. Others punish Iran for its poor human rights record. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, just before the close, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 30 points. The S&P was up a fraction. The Nasdaq was up 43. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
While rare, being rescued by the Coast Guard while out on the water or on a hike is not really an unusual event in Kodiak, unless you're being dragged out to sea on a giant inflatable flamingo. KMXT's Jared Griffin has this story of an unusual rescue with a happy ending.
It was a picturesque summer Saturday last weekend in Kodiak. Nation Sega, his sister, her roommate, and their dogs were enjoying the sunny skies and warm temperatures out in Menashka Bay, about 5 miles from the city of Kodiak. It's common for recreators to fish, swim, surf, and kayak in the bay, but Sega and his friends brought something different, a giant inflatable flamingo.
Like, we usually do it in like a lake or something, or we're usually more cautious, like, but Saturday we were just having so much fun. We didn't even think, we were not paying attention.
By Saturday afternoon, the winds picked up and pulled the flamingo riders out across the bay.
And then we were in the middle of nowhere at one point, but we just called 911. We're like, okay, well, we don't have any paddles or life jackets, but just we're out here. If you guys want to sit, can somebody out there?
As they waited for rescue, though, the flamingo drifted towards some offshore rocks until they finally ran aground. About an hour later, an MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter from Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak came to their rescue, hoisting them up. The Alaska troopers recovered the flamingo, but they still have it.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get that thing back.
Sega and his fellow flamingo riders plan to take the flamingo out again, but next time, they say they'll be more prepared. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jared Griffin.
Fire season has come to Alaska, with a creeping fire springing into being over the weekend on Kodiak. KMXT's Dylan Simard has this story.
The fire that emerged over the weekend in Kodiak along Passagshack Road, now named the Kalsen Creek Fire, is largely contained but is expected to burn itself out over the next few days. That's according to Howie Kent, a fire management officer for Alaska Division of Forestry. He says that the cause of the fire is still to be determined.
It appears to be a human-caused fire. We just haven't determined the exact cause at this point. I currently have 4 of our Division of Forestry firefighting staff on scene down there. They've been working with the Kodiak Coast Guard personnel there from the local base. And also, we hired maritime helicopters to help us support that fire effort with personnel movement and bucket work.
The fire was first reported around 10 p.m. Saturday evening, and it had quickly grown in size come Sunday morning. It burned along an area boxed in by the Kalsen Creek and Olds River. As of Monday afternoon, it had caused no structural damage or loss of life and was not expected to do so. Kent says that they're getting the upper hand on the fire, but it may take a while for it to finally be extinguished.
So as it sits now, the fire is approximately 62 acres. It's 80% contained, which means we've got a pretty close getting it wrapped up here, at least getting it so it won't have any forward progress movement. We'll probably be on that fire the next couple of days, mopping up the hot spots and making sure that, the fire isn't going to go anywhere.
Kent's crew arrived in Kodiak Monday on a commercial flight and began fighting the fire alongside crews from the Kodiak Coast Guard base. Coast Guard fire had been on scene since Sunday afternoon. Drops of chemical retardant began Sunday as the firefighting aircraft based in Kenai can only fly during daytime. Hand crews are presently working to control the fire, supported by a helicopter with a bucket to do spot drops on particularly hot areas. The fire crews do not expect the fire to grow in size or move substantially, and thus have not called for additional firefighting teams and assets. They are also expecting a return to rainy weather to make the job easier after days of bright and dry weather in Kodiak. No overnight fire camp has been established, and the fire crews have gotten rooms at a local establishment in the area. They have been provided a transportation vehicle by one of the local fire departments. Kent provided a reminder of fire safety while camping.
As people are out recreating, they just need to be really cognizant about where they are having a fire, and then before they leave, they must extinguish fully that fire and touch every square inch of the fire that they did build and ensure that it's out by touching it with their bare hand.
For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski visited Dillingham last week. She said the primary reason for her visit was to gather ideas for permanent protections against developments like the proposed Pebble Mine. Murkowski once chaired the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and has historically supported resource development. For years, she declined to support or oppose Pebble, saying that it was important to wait for the federal permitting process to play out. As the Army Corps of Engineers neared its final decision last year and undercover tapes emerged of Pebble leaders doubting she'd take a stand against the project, Murkowski did just that. In Dillingham, Murkowski met with people from the commercial, subsistence, and recreational fisheries. She also held a closed meeting with select community leaders at the Dillingham School.
This is kind of the beginning of stakeholder engagements and meetings, and we will be continuing this throughout the process.
Murkowski said the best way to ensure long-term protections is for Congress to pass a law. In the past, groups that opposed Pebble have pushed for a preemptive veto from the Environmental Protection Agency.
That clearly is a tool that provides for a level of protection, but it doesn't necessarily ensure that any entity coming beyond the Pebble proposal would be prohibited from mining activity. And so if that's what is being sought, it's legislation.
Earlier this year, regional and statewide groups opposed to Pebble put forward several options for protecting the area. One was to create a national fisheries area, which would bypass the need for a state designation. Murkowski said possibilities include the federal government obtaining state land. That would give the feds the authority to protect that land from any future development.
There have been discussions about whether it's exchanges or ways that you can ensure that the mineral rights that currently exist with the state are exchanged, are conveyed. So these are the types of things that we are exploring at this point in time.
Former President Donald Trump issued a statement Monday blaming Lisa Murkowski for the Biden administration's decision to suspend action on drilling leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin has this report.
In a press release from his Save America Political Action Committee, Trump wrote, quote, "Senator Lisa Murkowski has cost the great people of Alaska billions and billions of dollars by voting for radical left Biden appointees, which in turn led to the revocation of ANWR drilling, which Alaskans have been fighting to see happen for six decades," unquote. Trump also renewed his pledge to work for Murkowski's defeat, suggesting he'd visit Alaska next year to campaign against her. Murkowski, when she was a key Senate swing vote in 2017, got ANWR drilling added to the Republican tax bill. Trump signed the bill into law. As it directed, the Trump administration held the first lease sale in the refuge in the final days of Trump's presidency. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland last week suspended those drilling leases. Murkowski voted for Haaland's confirmation. Trump's statement doesn't mention it, but Senator Dan Sullivan also voted to confirm Haaland. Congressman Don Young crossed the Capitol to urge senators at her confirmation hearing to support her. Trump has repeatedly threatened to campaign against Murkowski. She was one of seven Republican senators to vote to convict him at his second impeachment trial. Of the seven, Murkowski is the only one running for re-election next year. The angle Trump took in his press release, taking credit for allowing oil drilling in the refuge while blaming Murkowski for the Biden administration's anti-drilling agenda, echoes an opinion piece in the Anchorage Daily News last week. Its author is Kelly Chewbacca, a Republican who has filed for Murkowski's Senate seat. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A Massachusetts company is sending genetically modified salmon to dinner tables in the U.S. for the first time. Aqua Bounty Technologies says it's shipping 5 tons of bioengineered salmon to distributors this month. It's marketed as a sustainable alternative to other kinds of salmon, but Aqua Bounty's fish hasn't received the warmest reception in Alaska, where it's often called frankenfish. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
In a press, Tim Bristol of Homer is the director of Salmon State, an Alaska organization that defends wild salmon populations.
It's going to be a real challenge for us moving forward to make sure that we do everything we possibly can to educate the American and the international consumer that if you want the salmon that's best for you and supports communities and small family businesses, you need to choose wild Alaska salmon.
Aqua Bounty salmon is a genetic mixture of three different fish. Atlantic salmon, Chinook salmon, and the eel-like ocean pout. It grows twice as fast as its non-engineered counterparts, reaching full market size in 18 months. This is the first time a company has sold genetically engineered salmon in the U.S. Federal regulators ruled the salmon safe to eat and sell in 2015. But for a while, Aqua Bounty still didn't have permission to grow its salmon in the U.S. Instead, it was working out of facilities in Canada and Panama. That was until 2019. The latest batch of salmon headed to market in the U.S. comes from a facility in Albany, Indiana. The FDA says Aqua Bounty's fish are similar nutritionally to non-engineered, farm-raised Atlantic salmon. Aqua Bounty says its fish could help mitigate overfishing and that they create less pollution than farmed fish. Not everyone's convinced.
It's just a faster way of doing business and making money.
Sarah Erickson owns Alaskans in Soldotna. She's also a vocal opponent of fish farming and a former commercial fisherman.
They had a picture of a regular farm salmon and then their farm salmon. And it looks just like a giant. I mean, what's the point of that?
A big concern for environmental groups has been whether fish can escape from the facility and mate with wild salmon. Late last year, a federal judge ordered the FDA to look into what would happen if that occurred. Aqua Bounty says there's no risk of that happening since it grows sterile salmon in inland-based tanks with multiple barriers to prevent fish and eggs from escaping. Erickson says that's one good thing that sets Aqua Bounty salmon apart from other farmed salmon.
And I appreciate that. In fact, all fish farming should really go to that kind of place, but it's a lot more expensive to do.
Erickson says salmon should be clearly labeled in stores so people know what they're buying. Federal law currently requires GMOs to be labeled as such, but that doesn't just have to be through wording. A QR code scanned with a smartphone also suffices. And there are some exceptions to USDA's current labeling law. Food served in restaurants, for example, doesn't have to be labeled. Labeling is voluntary in Canada, where Aqua Bounty previously sold its salmon. Senator Lisa Murkowski has been a vocal opponent of genetically engineered salmon. Legislation she introduced this month would require the words genetically engineered to appear on bioengineered salmon in stores. It's called the Genetically Engineered Salmon Labeling Act. Senator Dan Sullivan is a co-sponsor.
It would be a level of consumer awareness, because it is only when we are aware of what is being sold, what is being put in front of us, that we can say firmly and clearly, nope, don't want this on my table.
A spokesperson from Aqua Bounty says the company will use the phrase genetically engineered on grocery store packaging. Several grocery chains have pledged not to sell genetically modified salmon, including Safeway and Kroger, which owns Fred Meyer. Bristol says he hasn't heard of any Alaska businesses interested in buying the product.
We have seen Alaskan stores carry farm-raised Atlantic salmon in the past, and usually the blowback is pretty significant and comes pretty quickly.
The Aqua Bounty spokesperson says the company isn't shipping any salmon to Alaska yet. With help from Izzy Ross in Dillingham, I'm Sabine Pooks in Kenai.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Lots of fishing going on besides salmon. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Salmon fisheries are opening nearly every day across Alaska, and as always, lots of other fisheries are gearing up or ongoing. Southeast Alaska's Dungeness crab fishery opens June 15th. Last year's total catches produced nearly 6.7 million pounds, just shy of the record 7.3 million taken in 2002. Kodiak crabbers also are dropping pots for dungies. On a market note, California crabbers fetched record prices for Dungeness, averaging $6.02 a pound, with some getting as much as $14. A Red King crab fishery opens at Norton Sound on June 15th with a 290,000-pound catch quota. Southeast Alaska's summer pot fishery for spot shrimp is pulling up the last of its more than half-million-pound catch. Beam trawlers also are on the grounds, targeting a 1.8-million-pound harvest of pink and side striped shrimp. And Southeast divers are still going down in some areas for the remainder of a half-million-pound of gooey duck clams. Prince William Sound extended its spot shrimp season that began in May into September, with up to 60 boats vying for a 70,000-pound pot catch. Alaska scallop fishery opens July 1st in regions spanning from southeast to the Bering Sea. The total catch has not been announced yet. Alaska's halibut catch has topped 5.5 million pounds. Steady demand for fresh fish has kept prices still running more than $2 a pound higher than last year, ranging from $5.50 to $6.75 a pound or more in most major ports and reaching $7 a pound at Homer. Catches of sablefish, more commonly called black cod, have topped 14 million pounds. Those prices also are up, ranging from $1 a pound for 2-pounders to $5.80 for 7-up. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 8th day of June, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:11. It will set again at 11:07. That will give us 17 hours and 56 minutes of daylight. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 2:19 p.m. That will be a 6.3-foot tide, followed by a low tide here on the east side at 7:24 p.m. That will be a 2.5-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 1:33 a.m. of 8.9 feet, and our low tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 8:28 a.m. and be minus 0.6 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:34 p.m. That will be a 12-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:15 this evening of 3 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night, high tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:05 a.m. and be 13.7 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 8:50 a.m. and be minus 1 foot. 56 degrees here in Kodiak right now. Pretty pleasant out there, really. They are still calling for rain, mainly after 2, now they're saying. High near 55. We blazed right through that. Rain tonight and rain likely tomorrow. A low of about 47 tonight. Southeast winds to 25 miles per hour. And a high of 51 tomorrow, with east winds gusting as high as 25 miles per hour. Which brings us to our marine weather. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory through Wednesday. Southeast 25 right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, east 25, seas to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikov, small craft advisory today and Wednesday. Right now, southeast 15 becoming east 25 this afternoon, seas building to 7 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 25, seas to 10 feet. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bay, small craft advisory for tonight. South winds at 10 knots in Chiniac Bay will turn to the southeast and go to 20 knots this afternoon, seas building to 4 feet. And for tonight, look for southeast 25, seas to 5 feet. For Marmot Bay, small craft advisory tonight, east wind 10 knots, becoming southeast 20 knots this afternoon, seas building to 5 feet this afternoon. And for tomorrow, look for east wind at 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. Kodiak City Council is holding a work session tonight. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. This meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast right here on KMXT at 100.1 FM, as well as web-streamed on the city website. And for the link, go to that website. You can also find agendas and meeting packets. For more information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. Kodiak City Council will hold a regular meeting on Thursday. That's also happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multi-purpose room. It's also open to the public and will be broadcast here on KMXT, web-streamed from the city's website. Call the clerk for more information, 486-8636. Meetings for the Kodiak Island Borough coming up. Tonight, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 is having their regular board meeting. That's happening at 6 p.m. at Bayside Fire Hall. Tomorrow, the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a work session. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, the Borough Assembly is having a work session. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. And next Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a regular meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. the Assembly Chambers, Wednesday, June 16th. Sign up for the Kodiak Public Library Summer Reading Program. All ages are welcome to participate and earn prizes. You just need to sign up for Beanstack to log in your reading, earn prizes, and get involved. You can check it out at kodiak.beanstack.org. For more information, call the library at 486-8686. Have you heard the buzz? Kodiak Public Library is hosting a community beekeeping project. Watch a live hive check every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper, or you can watch from the safety of inside. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. If you're looking for a job, the library is a great place to start your job search. They have resources for discovering new career paths, creating a resume, finding local job opportunities. The Alaska Department of Labor offers several weekly workshops, like creating effective resumes or on interviewing strategies. The library can help you with your job search. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. And that number again is 486-8686. The 2021 Rainbow Fun Run is happening. That's going on June 21st through 25th. All ages and athletic abilities are encouraged, and they have 1 and 5K course options, post-race food trucks, island-style mobile entertainment with DJ Mark and Pride Celebration. That's the in-person event only. They have virtual routes and running guides during the entire Pride week. No attendance fee. Donations go to the KHS GSA Club. Option to register for Anchorage's virtual Pride Run and sign up to run in person with the team Kodiak Pride Pavement Pounders. And you need to go to www.runsignup.com. On the 21st to the 25th, they're having guided virtual runs. And on Saturday the 26th, they're having a Pride Fun Run in person at the Kodiak High School, Saturday the 26th, including that starts at 9:30 a.m., 5K start at 10 a.m., and the 1 mile starts at 10:15. And it sounds like food trucks, island-style mobile entertainment, and Pride Celebration goes from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., Saturday the 26th. Are you missing live music? The Kodiak Arts Council and Lucky Pierre Productions are bringing the Alaska bluegrass band Blackwater Railroad Company to the fairgrounds on Saturday, July 3rd. The show starts at 6:30 with Frank Sullivan and Jillian Leah, followed by Ellamy Tiller and Twang. Doors open at 6 p.m. Bring your camp chair, enjoy some food from the Kodiak Lions, and you can get your tickets at kodiakarts.org. That's all one word, kodiakarts.org. Again, that's July 3rd, Saturday, and I have had under good advisement that there will be a beer garden.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 1, date issued 10 a.m. on June 6th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 8th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th, in the following areas: in the Cape Alatak, Humpy Dead Man, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Northwest Kodiak District from noon Wednesday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Tuesday, June 8th, and remain open until further notice: the Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Nisuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Tuesday, June 8th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. Into the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart in detail in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.